bit time to go. He's been making music for about as long as anyone can remember. And some of his friends wanted to get together and pay him tribute, to give thanks to our friend Larry Goshorn for all the terrific times many of us have spent listening to and enjoying Larry's records and live performances. I'm Brian O'Donnell. Now, some of his friends who've collaborated with Larry over the decades are joining us this evening. Of course, brother Tim Goshorn, one of Larry's oldest and closest friends and bandmate in Sacred Mushroom, Joe Stewart. Also, Marcus Sastry, former Pure Prairie League drummer Billy Hines, Katie Lauer, Gary Burbank, long-distance love on the phone from Larry Nager in Nashville, pianist Steve Schmidt from New York. Also joining us, Bam Powell, Jim Hunt, and Jeff Searbell. And one of the original members of Pure Prairie League, George Powell. Plenty of music coming up, too. Sacred Mushroom, Pure Prairie League, Shades of Blue, and, of course, the Goshorn Brothers Band. Music that Larry's been involved with as composer, singer, guitarist, producer. We've got a couple of hours of fun and memories ahead as we celebrate our friend Larry Goshorn here on 91.7 WVXU. But it don't seem right. We've got a great group of folks here to pay tribute to our friend Larry Goshorn, who's been making music in this town for about as long as anybody can remember, I think. Tim Goshorn, Larry's brother, is on the telephone. We're going to have probably a couple more folks joining us on the phone. Marco Sastry is here, Billy Hines, Pure Prairie League and Goshorn Brothers Band here, Gary Burbank, Joe Stewart, played in Sacred Mushroom, Katie Lauer is with us this evening, and some other guests might be popping in as well. We love you, man.
Oh,
we love
shucks.
You, first
Thanks.
Off. And your brother Tim is on the phone. I want you guys to take us back to the early Goshorn Brothers days. I mean, the family Goshorns.
You and I were talking earlier about where we originally came from, and it was Fort Thomas, Kentucky. That's the first place I remember. And after that, we moved over here to Hyde Park and then back to Kentucky. And back over to Ohio again, and in Oakley, where we settled eventually. And that's where I met Joe, and we started going to Withrow High School. And I picked up the guitar. I did my first gig at like 14 years old.
Is it on this side of the river?
Yeah, yeah. I played a church variety show. And they gave me $10, and I said, "Well, this is what I'm going to do."
What were you playing? Folk music, or
I don't even remember what I did. I guess it was folk music at the time.
Yeah,
it was early '60s, and folk music was big. Hootenanny.
So, Tim, where are you at this stage of the game?
I was like three. So, no, actually, when Larry started doing that stuff, I was 7 years younger than he was. We grew up listening to my mom singing, and music was everywhere in our household.
Yeah, my father played guitar, and my grandfather played ukulele and guitar. And
piano.
He actually played every instrument in the Marine Band at one time. And my mom sang with Horace Heights Orchestra down in Georgia.
That's right.
She was quite a singer.
It was a musical household.
Yeah.
Fast forward to Withrow High School. You meet this guy, Joe Stewart.
Joe Stewart, yes.
Did you immediately have a musical connection? Or what?
We did. It was, we were... both tried out for the Withrow Minstrels. I think it was our sophomore year, which would have been 1964,
63-ish. 63, yeah.
And Larry was playing in a group called the Landsmen, and I remember they looked pretty much like the Kingston Trio, only there were four of them, but they wore white jeans and striped shirts and all that, and penny loafers, no socks.
That was it.
Yeah, but I got to play in the Withrow Minstrels as a soloist. And that's when we met and we started hanging out together and spent a lot of nights and weekends over at Larry's house playing the guitar and, you know, teaching each other licks.
Played a lot of guitar.
Yeah, we did. And so...
wrecked a couple of cars. And...
Yeah, we hung out and did other things too, but it was a great...
We got into skateboarding for a little while. You remember that?
I remember that. We used to...
we were never very good, were we?
No, but we used to...
Wait a minute, I'm trying to think of hills in the Oakley area.
Well, we would go over
Did
to
go
Daniel
down the Mount Lookouts.
I remember Daniel Drake Park.
Okay. Yeah.
I remember and going down Park. That hill with our guitars, playing guitars on skateboards.
When they had the metal wheels, too.
Metal wheels. It was a comfortable ride.
Through sparks at night. Sacred Mushroom, when'd that come about? In the very beginning, how'd you put the band together?
Joe and I went up to the Newport Folk Festival. It was the year that Bob Dylan dropped his acoustic and picked up the band. And of course, everybody was complaining about that, but we thought it was pretty cool. So we spent a lot of time up there. And then by the time we got back to town, we decided, you know, we should do that.
Yeah, actually, we hitchhiked from Hyannisport. I had gone up there to work in a gas station for the summer. And anyway, we hitchhiked to the Newport Folk Festival. And I think Larry borrowed a guitar. I think I had mine with me. And we sat down in the park outside and started playing Beatles music. And we drew a big crowd.
Yeah.
And I think that was really the impetus for the whole thing.
We said,
you know, we can play to a crowd. And we really liked it.
Well, we were amazed at how much they really liked it. The funny thing is, on the way there, we hitchhiked to the park from wherever we were in Rhode Island. And on the way there, I left my guitar on the side of the road, jumped in the car, and we drove off. And by the time I got back to look for the guitar, it was, of course, gone. Yeah. And I had to borrow a guitar. And Joe and I sat there and just started playing. There was nobody there. A lot of people around, but nobody near us. And we just started playing, and the next thing you know, we had a huge party going on.
So that was the summer of my first year in college, and by the end of October, I quit college.
Didn't take
and,
long.
And came back to Cincinnati, and we got together with Fred Fogwell and Doug Hamilton
and Danny.
And Danny Goshorn, Larry's brother, and formed the Sacred Mushroom.
Actually, would have been still 66 or 67?
66.
66.
So I guess we played our first gigs as the Mushroom sometime in late 66.
Yeah, had to be like November or right. Something like that.
It's about the same time that we rented a house over in Walnut Hills, which became known as the Mushroom House.
On Upland Avenue.
On Upland Place, yeah. And if you have a copy of the old album, there's a picture on the back with all of our friends would come over and hang out. And
the hippies sitting on the big old front porch. Yeah, we were
on Considine Avenue. They let us practice in the barn behind the
Frank Wood owned WEBN,
and at that time Frank Wood was only doing classical,
right, and jazz on Sunday night.
Yeah, and then Bo came back. I think he graduated from Harvard and he came back to town, and this was back in 66, 67.
Yeah,
and he came over to the Mushroom House and borrowed all our records to do the first Jelly Pudding show.
He got all of our records for that first Jelly Pudding show, and they were some good records, too.
Did you get them back?
I believe we did get them back.
I met my baby at the station, and I knew she'd seen another man. And I knew she'd seen another man. I didn't ask questions. You know, I just made me understand. She hadn't been gone a long time, just long enough to put me down. Well, she hadn't been gone a long time, well, just long enough to put me down. She don't love me no more, so I guess there's no sense in staying around.
baby's been away now. Me and no, I know just where she's been. Well, my baby's been away now, and I don't have to ask her where she's been. I guess it's like they say, yeah, the good thing is what's happening.
First mushroom gig was where?
It might have been the Hyde Park
Teen Club.
Yeah, Hyde Park Teen Club with Jim Tarbell. But it was the first gigs we played were in the basement of the Church of the Redeemer.
Right.
Yeah, and then later he rented the building. I'm not sure it was farther down in on Erie Avenue, closer to the square. And that's when he brought in some of the first national acts like Quicksilver Messenger Service
and Grateful Dead.
Vanilla Fudge. And so we got to warm up for those guys. And it was a pretty heady time for us and for a lot of our peers in Cincinnati, I think.
Yeah.
Based on the fact that people still remember us, which is like, that's crazy.
How do you suppose they liked you in the basement of the church?
Yeah, oh, the Grateful Dead. Well, I don't think we didn't play with the Dead.
No, we talked to them, but we didn't get to play with them because they didn't let opening acts play for them.
It's because their shows lasted 6 hours.
It's true. Right. Nobody knew what was going to happen, but once they started playing, they just didn't stop.
And they get tired of the opening act being better than they were.
they couldn't have that.
Yeah.
Really. Actually, we drove around that afternoon with some of the roadies and a couple of the guys. Bob Weir, it was crazy. They brought San Francisco to Cincinnati. Before they showed up, we were the only vestige of that type of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we played with a number of the San Francisco bands that came to town. I think we played a gig at La Swordsville, or maybe it was someplace up Middletown-ish, and that's when Blind Al Jefferson and Can't Heat.
Can't Heat.
They flew in, and their equipment didn't make it. So we warmed up the crowd, and then they showed up a little bit late, and they didn't have any equipment. And they said, you fellas mind if we use your stuff? We said, sure, take it.
Yeah,
so
go ahead.
They cranked everything up to 10 and blew up our amplifiers and left town.
Yeah. It was fun, though.
Hi, my name's Jeff Zierveld. I'm one of the original Ludlow Garage crew members, and I'm here to say a few words about my friend Larry Goshorn, who I have known since I was a young lad, though when we were younger, he was probably too busy with the bands that he was involved with to notice much. But now that we've matured, we've managed to work together on several music projects, and I've been privileged enough to be able to work on graphics for a lot of the music that he's worked on. So we've gotten to know each other quite well, and he's a very warm and wonderful human being, as well as being a tremendous musician and having been a great influence on music here in Cincinnati as well as all around the world, I would think. He's certainly been an influence for me on what I listen to and what I prefer. Like I say, I've managed to do the graphics with him, and unlike being a musician playing, I've gotten to work on a different part of the creative level with him, and he's always been incredibly prepared and knows what he likes when he sees it. And fortunately for me, he's seen some things that he's liked that I've done. My first concert seeing them was in 1968, Lake Ridge Hall, release party for their original Sacred Mushroom album, and that is one of the graphics projects that I got to redo for Larry, and when I finished the recoloring, he felt that that's what he had originally wanted to see, something a little more psychedelic. So, like I say, I've been fortunate to work with him, so there you go.
We're having a good time talking about times with Larry Goshorn here in WVXU. How soon did the album come about? When did you record the album? 67?
It was...
68, I think.
Actually, it was late 67, I think. We were only together about a year and before the album came out. And it was out for a year, and then we broke up, right?
I remember leaving in the summer of 68. Donnie Litwin, who was the producer, took us over to Jewel Studios, and we were just laying down tracks for what we were doing at that time. And then he decided to put it out as an album. And I think it came out in either late 68 or early 69.
Yeah.
And that's what I remember.
Yeah, I think you're right, because we did actually break up in 69, I remember now. But when we went to put the album together, we had, of course, never recorded on anything other than, you know, a big two-track machine. And what's his name was the engineer out there?
Gene Lawson.
Gene Lawson. Thank you, Tim, who actually has designed some of the best microphones for studios around the world. He was really a good engineer. And we had four tracks to deal with, and they were... Some of the knobs were bigger than a lot of the machines are nowadays.
Yeah.
They were enormous.
Mm-hmm. Can't hear your voice, can't see a thing. Everything I do just seems to bring. But I know you're there, cause I can feel your presence everywhere. But I can't seem to make contact, got no way to bring you back to me. I try to think just like you would, but you like to think that I'm no good for you. I felt it all come on in any day, now you'll be gone. Tell me what you're trying to do, show me how to stop loving you so much. I hate to be this way, getting harder every day, to understand the way you are, and I'm not getting very far with you. I wish I knew just what to do. There's not a future left for you and me. I've got to find a way to keep me going day to day. I don't know which way to choose, think I'm just about to lose my mind. Understand the way you are, and I'm not getting very far with you.
Before that, we had signed a contract with a guy out in New York, Shelby Singleton SS International. And the producer's name was Finley Duncan, We called him Uncle Finley. And they took us down to Nashville and recorded at the old Bradley's barn. We recorded a song called...
Yellow Fellow.
No, it wasn't Yellow Fellow. It was A Quiet Revolution.
Yeah, we did both of those.
Yeah. And they were trying to cash in on the hippie movement.
Right.
And so we went down there. And then when we cut the Sacred Mushroom album and it came out, Shelby, God bless him, sued and put a stop to it, and then took whatever money came out of that, and that was sort of the...
Well, actually, we were only 17 when we signed that thing with him, so it was all illegal.
Yeah, but we didn't have attorneys.
Yeah, we didn't
know. We didn't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. And it didn't make much money anyway, so we didn't lose much money.
There you go. Look on the positive side.
Yeah, but Shelby Singleton, he had about 1,000 guys like you, and that little bout, we're happy for him, too.
Yeah, Shelby needed the money. Yeah. So.
I have these memories of the Black Dome and you guys playing there.
I still have posters from
my
the
memory
Black Dome.
Says that,
was that
you could
Jones.
You could No. Sacred Mushroom.
We did?
Yeah. Oh yeah. But yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong. My memory says you could, to me it was very, very, very late at night, maybe middle of the night.
We
1 o'clock, 2 o'clock in the morning, you guys.
We actually did one show that we played all night long. I mean until like 6 o'clock in the morning. And that place was crazy.
But it seems like most Saturday nights you could walk in there at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and Ivan and the Sabres or you guys or somebody.
There was always somebody playing.
Doing some jams, yeah.
Well, you know, everybody had youth on their side back then, and you just didn't get tired. So we played as long as we could play.
Till our fingers bled.
That's right. More than once.
Yes.
What was Larry Goshorn doing once when the Sacred Mushroom blew up?
When the Sacred Mushroom broke up, I ended up going to Hawaii and spent about 13 months over there. And I recorded a solo album at a studio over there that came out as the ultimate white album. It had no label. It had nothing on the cover. It was just white. Everything was white. And that's what I did for those 13 months. And then I came back, ended up in San Francisco, and stayed there for a little while. And then I came back to town, and we put together Mushroom Jones with Billy Hines and Timmy and Dutch Palmer. And it started out with Billy playing with us, and then Billy took off with Pure Prairie League. And Artie Alenikoff became the drummer. Artie's down in Nashville now, still playing drums. And
Billy, yeah. When did you and Larry first hook up then?
Well, the first time I remember seeing Joe and Larry would have been... 68, 67, and I saw him with James Gang, Graham Funk.
Oh, right.
Eden Park.
Right, right, right.
And then Janis Joplin at Music Hall.
Those were good gigs.
Yeah.
Those were good gigs. I remember the Janis Joplin gig. We, in the middle of the show, the Beatles were on the Smothers Brothers that night, and we had like a 10-inch TV.
It was the recording of the Beatles. They weren't on live.
Yeah, I think they were.
No. It was a recording of, I want to say All You Need Is Love. Is that what they were singing?
Come on. I'm lucky I remember that. We were there somewhere.
Who knows? Something.
Anyway, Tim laughing in the background.
We all came out on stage and sat on
Tim's
the floor.
Tim's got beer down there.
Yeah.
See, I think it was... Ed Sullivan. And they were playing live, because why would we want to watch a recording? But anyway.
Well, we'd really like to know what we did, and if anybody could tell us, that'd be
maybe
very
in
nice.
The shape you were in, you didn't mind whether it was recording or not. You didn't know that.
No, well, at the time, it just seemed live.
But the point is, she rolled a TV out on stage, correct?
Yeah, it was like a tiny little TV that you couldn't see, and we put a microphone right down on the TV, and the whole place, I mean, Music Hall is sitting there, and we're sitting on the floor in front of it. And we're watching the Beatles on TV in the middle of the concert. It was pretty far out.
So you went through the Mushroom Jones thing, and I remember a lot of gigs at Crows.
Crows 1 and Crows 2. Yeah.
How long did that outfit last?
We did go down, Tim and I and Dutch and Artie, and I remember we went down to Macon, Georgia to record for the Allman Brothers.
That was Capricorn Records.
Capricorn Records.
Was it Bill Howerson?
Well, again, my memory is Wexler. Like a sieve, so.
Didn't Billy go down there with us?
Billy, were you with us on that?
Yeah, I remember flying into the airport and the conveyor just crushed it, my bass drum.
Oh, was that the one where it popped?
Yeah, but we got it back in shape. That was a great bar down there.
Yeah, the bar that we played.
Grant's Tomb.
Grant's Tomb. Wow, that was more fun than anything.
The cops would come in and arrest people.
Well, there were women dancing naked up on Timmy's shoulders.
One arm dancer.
We've got Billy Hines and Marco Sastry and Joe Stewart and Gary Burbank and Katie Lauer. When did you and Larry meet? Do you have a recollection of that?
I didn't meet him, but I came in and saw him at Coco's. I think it's the first time that I ran into him. And I just sat down and listened to him, as I want to do. I'd maybe go along not paying any attention, and something grabs me, and I just sit the closest place and start staring. I'm bad to do that.
Scares people a lot.
It does scare people a lot.
She gets this look in her eye.
Yeah. And so that's the first place I met Lonnie Mack, too. And, I thought, well, this is really good. And then at the radio station, I found a Goshorn Brothers recording of Kentucky Moonshine. And I played it over and over again every week.
She did. She wore that thing out. Thank you, by the way, Katie.
Oh, you're more than welcome. It was my pleasure.
That was the first song I ever published.
I don't play for the listener. I play for me, which is bad.
Well, I don't know. That's the way radio used to be, and we liked it. Sometimes Kentucky moonshine is sweeter than the sweetest wine. When you're lonely, make you sing the blue. Anyway, Kentucky moonshine, I love you. And sometimes you like Kentucky moonshine, and you're sweeter than the sweetest wine. When I'm lonely, you make me sing the blues. Anyway, Kentucky moonshine, I love you. Kentucky whiskey makes you feel so fine. Opens up your eyes and gives your nose a shine. Gets me deep inside just like you love it do. It makes it hard to choose between moonshine and you. I'm lonely, I sing the blue. Anyway, Kentucky moonshine, I love you. You feel so fine. Opens up your eyes and gives your nose a shine. Gets me deep inside just like you love it do. It makes it hard to choose between moonshine and you. I'm lonely, I sang the blue. Anyway, Kentucky moonshine, I love you. Sure enough I do. I love you. Kentucky moonshine, I love you.
Marcos, you did. I've done a lot of work with Larry along the way, and in recording studios especially, and putting the Shades of Blue project together. Talk a little bit about that and when you guys first hooked up for the first time.
I knew about Larry because my sister had Sacred Mushroom record, and my little bands, we started out, we actually covered tunes off that record.
Cool.
So we kind of knew, outside the window, there's a tree.
That was Cream. Yeah. But,
and so I later saw, I think I might have seen the new Gershwin Brothers band together, maybe. We were playing the same place, Hot Shots.
Oh, yeah.
We were going to play, and I was up there. We were, like, getting ready, doing our sound check, and Larry walked up on stage and said, "Hey, that amp sounds good, man." I said, "Thank you." And then that's when we met, and I started going to their gigs and hanging out with them. And then we're playing, I think it was golf one day, and he turned to me and said, "Let's make a blues record. Let's do a blues project."
Yeah.
And that's how it started. He said, let's get all these guys around town here that play all these great. And at that time, Cincinnati had a great blues scene. A lot of it came out of Gary's clubs, because Gary had all the, he was getting all the blues people that were all working at the time in his club. He was like giving them a base to work from. So that's, we got all those cats. And then that was a very successful project for us.
Yeah. A bunch of jazz guys, too. We put together some great bands. We decided that it didn't matter what band you were in, really. We were just putting people together.
Hybrids.
Yeah, definitely hybrids.
Because everything comes from the blues. Mm-hmm. Most everything in American music, especially American pop music, starts with the blues. So...
This was a benefit CD as well, wasn't it? Didn't it benefit musicians or
retired Marcus
musicians?
And I?
It benefited us for a while. And we did a music hall show that went off very well.
Yeah, and had 1,000 people there. And then we put out Shades of Blue 2 the next year and did another concert, and that went well, too.
That was a different theory. That theory was take all the people who aren't known as blues players and have them play blues.
Right.
Like that's where we got a lot of rock guys to come in and play. So
even country guys.
So we had the veteran jazz and blues guys on the first one and that on the second. And we have a third one in the can no one's heard yet.
You know, I listened to the to both of them not too long ago, and I got to tell you, they're really, really good albums. Mm-hmm. They're
everybody I played that stuff for, I mean, everyone is just knocked out when they hear it, and they wonder, why isn't this, you know, like anthems for every bands that play
think it could
blues
be.
Around the country?
I'll tell you, Big Joe Duskin sounds so good on that thing. Out of me.
So we were all, I don't know if I was engineer. I might have been engineering. Larry was in the room. Joe wanted to be in the control room.
Yeah.
He had phones on, and the band was out there. And when he started to sing, Larry said it was so deafening, he didn't have phones.
I did not expect it.
He's like putting books in his ears and stuff.
Really, I had to move over to the corner, and there wasn't a whole lot of room in Marcos's control room. There was no way to get away from it. But, I mean, he was so good.
Joe was something else.
Yeah.
That's, once again, like all those guys, the nicest guy in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, the older the musicians, the easier they are to get along with, you know, I've found over the years. Not to say that the kids aren't doing great, too, you know. Yeah.
Hello, world. Have you seen me sad to be? Colored brown, looks something like a Japanese.
But we had one band in the first one, which was Kenny Poole, Cal Collins,
Frank Vincent,
Mike Scharf, and what's the drummer's name? Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah.
And that was something, you know, it was something to see.
Yeah.
That was something to
see. That was a long time ago. That was 1990?
No, that was actually closer to 2000. Because we won the regional award that year for the best album. And I think it was 99 or 2000.
Mm-hmm. Right. So.
Next time you see me, things won't be the same. Next time you see me, things won't be the same. And if it hurts you, darling, you only have yourself to blame. Like the true, true saying, all that shines is not gold. Like the true, true saying, all that shines is not gold. And like the good book said, you got to reap just what you sow. Well, you lied, cheated, for so long. Well, you lied, cheated, for so long. You're just a wrong young woman, another queen is on your throne.
low for so long. Well, you lied, cheated, uh-oh, for so long. You're just the wrong young woman. Another queen is on your throne. Next time you see me, things won't be the same. Next time you see me, things won't be the same. And if it hurts you, darling, you only have yourself to blame. And if it hurts you, darling, you only have yourself to blame. And if it hurts you, darling, you only have yourself to blame.
Gary's former former restaurant club being a hub for these wonderful
Burbank's
wonderful blues guys.
Excellent blues.
The food. Yow. The entertainment.
I was at Memphis.
Ribbon and Blues. You started something, too, when you were on the air afternoons at WLW, getting a lot of these guys in.
Yeah, I did. I did
on a weekly, on a mm-hmm. weekly basis, which was phenomenal. It went on, and it was one of those kind of things where it's time to tune it in now.
It was always Friday afternoon. Stump the Band. We did that some, too. But the character was Howlin' Blind, Muddy Slim, your 60-minute jelly-belly toe jam man, learning you some blues. And so to learn you some blues, it couldn't just be me. So I had to get some people that knew what they were doing. And Larry was always, Marcos, everybody was always...
Bam,
so
Bam
good about
it.
Oh, yeah.
We had a lot of fun.
We had a great time.
I went in on a Friday afternoon quite accidentally and saw this whole blues act you had going on, and I thought it was probably the coolest thing I'd ever seen.
I'll tell you what they did. As soon as I retired, they put out memos. No more live music on this station. I think we were having too much fun.
We were.
I don't know.
And today, you know what?
I have
all of those on cassette.
Oh, you do?
Holy
I have all
man.
Of them.
That's a gold mine.
Yeah, it is a gold mine. Well, I'm sure we can't do anything with it, but I can listen
prior
to
prior to you starting that, though, there wasn't any live music on that radio station.
No.
Past the old heyday back in the 30s and 40s.
Right.
When
it was just kind
was
of an excuse.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I intended that all along, you know, when I started doing it. And then, you know, the character and things. And Sonny Mormon would come in often. And I mean, there were times when someone called at, what time did we do that? 4:30, something like that?
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. So then we'd get a call at, 30 minutes, 45 minutes beforehand. And I can't make it, man. I got a flat tire. You do not. Yeah, I do. Yeah. I haven't looked at my car yet, but I'm sure it's flat. Someone, you know. And so then you'd call either Sonny, Larry, Marco, somebody. Can you get here in 30 minutes? Yeah. And they'd be there.
Yeah. We were always looking forward to it.
Whatever you're doing, it was look at the clock and, oh, man, I got to get to.
Talk about belly laughs.
Turn it on. Oh,
I mean, we laughed so hard. Sometimes you couldn't catch your breath, you know. People would call in a song, and if we didn't know it, we'd just make it up.
I was Stump the Band, like you know, the old Johnny Carson thing.
Yeah.
Oh, and when we look forward to that, we would try to get that one just before a commercial break. And when they asked for a certain song and that we'd never heard of, we know that. And then, we got to come right back and do it. And so we take that break, and then all of us, okay, you got this first. And in 2.5 minutes, we had written a song. And it sounded like it was at least 3 minutes it took to write that song.
Yeah, easily.
He liked his women young and his whiskey old, but he'd take him any way he could if the truth be told. His temper ran high and his blood ran cold, and he longed for glory much more than gold. Mississippi, where the days are hot and long. The nights got even hotter when you play the right blues song. Juke joints jumping when the music's right. Sweaty bodies dancing until way after midnight. Snaky women, smoky rooms, liquor flowing free and dirty love blues. Painted faces, smiling lips, desperate hands reaching out for undulating hips. And his guitar's crying, tears of silk and steel. It screams with rage and moans with lust and whispers, this is real. He was just a man at the devil's gate, but he lost control when he sold his soul and sealed his fate. And the devil's greed and another man's wife and a trip down to the crossroad cost that blues man his life.
This is Jim Hunt talking to you about Larry Goshorn, my longtime good friend and buddy and great performer. I first met Larry back in about 1966-67 when I was a student at the University of Cincinnati. I actually was involved in the music business a little bit back in those days. I played guitar, or since we're talking about Larry, I should say I strummed guitar for a group called the Strangers in Town, four guys that were singers. And I also had another act with a guy named Charlie Carr. We had a folk act. We billed ourselves as the Carr Brothers. We sang together. So I followed the music scene pretty closely back in those days. And at that time, the basic configuration for a rock group was you would have like a bass player, rhythm guitar player, lead guitar player, and then a lead singer. What you didn't see too often, and in fact, I didn't see it until the first time with Larry and the Sacred Mushroom Band, was a guy like Larry who could both play lead guitar and sing lead at the same time. It was incredible. He was one of the first people around here to do that. We used to go see the Sacred Mushroom in places like the Pickle Barrel, the Round Table, the Mug Club, places like that. I got to know Larry pretty well, and from the get-go, he was just one of the nicest people I ever met. As talented as he was, he was just incredibly nice and giving. You may hear about something called the Mushroom House that was in existence back in those days. It was Cincinnati's probably the first hippie commune in this area, and Larry was a big part of it over there, of course, the Sacred Mushroom Band. The band at that time consisted of Larry playing lead and singing lead, his brother Danny, who did play sometimes but mainly sang lead as well. Fred Fogwell played rhythm guitar. The bass player was Joe Stewart. And the drummer was Doug Hamilton, known nowadays as Ross Hamilton. Just an incredible band. I saw them every chance I could get. Probably the best band in Cincinnati. And a little known fact here is that back in those days, Larry and I actually had the same manager. There was a guy named Don Litwin. The Litwin family had a jewelry business here in Cincinnati. His label was called Toy Tiger. But anyway, Donnie was the manager that I had for the Strangers in Town and also for the Carr Brothers. Donnie is the guy that produced the Sacred Mushroom album that Larry did. The album is on the Parallax label. Back in those days, if you didn't have a record label, you weren't going to be able to sell your records. It's not like it is nowadays where you can distribute things, you know, pretty much on your own. So Parallax was the record label. And Donnie was able to get Parallax involved because the Gimbel family in New York, department store family, were friends with the Litwins, and they owned Parallax. And Parallax actually was a sound effects label. The Sacred Mushroom album is the only one that they ever did that involved just music. So from there, I went on and spent the summer of love, 1967, in New York City with my friend Charlie Carr. And eventually ended up in law school, which was probably a good choice for me, given my my musical talents. And I kind of lost track of Larry, although I remember I did see him a couple of times when he was here in town playing with the Pure Prairie League. But I lost touch with Larry for about 20 or 25 years, became a practicing lawyer. And one day I was on an airplane flying to San Francisco. I had my son Noah with me. Noah was about 14 or 15 at the time. He was in high school. He was interested in rock and roll. So we're on the plane, and I went up to go to the bathroom, and I walked by, and there's Larry. And I had not seen him for like 20 or 25 years. He said he was going out to visit his daughter, Elizabeth, and we talked and renewed our friendship and exchanged telephone numbers, and then I became a big follower of the Goshorn brothers at that time. One of the places that they regularly played was called the Break Room, which was a pool hall and a bar up on Beachmont Avenue up near 275. Actually, Noah, when he was in high school, we would sneak him into the bar room, and he would get up and sing with the Goshorn brothers, which was kind of neat. Larry, for a while, I think, was kind of a mentor for Noah. He ended up actually, Larry produced both of the two albums that Noah made, one called Heartland Soil with Uncle Six, and the other one was called Long Black Train with Jason Denny. A couple of things that I remember from back in the day. Remember in the 60s, of course, the Vietnam War was going on. There was a lot of controversy about it. There was a radical English teacher at the university named Claude Allen. He lived in a kind of commune situation with students. He dated students. And he had a tradition that he called Gentle Thursday, where people would gather over on campus and do various things that were probably illegal at the time, but we still did them anyway. In any event, at one of those occasions, the Sacred Mushroom Band set up and they were going to play on the lawn right on Clifton Avenue, in between the law school and I think it's called Annie Law's, the auditorium there. And they're playing. We're there for about a half an hour listening to them. All of a sudden, the music stopped. Nobody could figure out what was going on. Well, we traced it back. They had plugged in back at the auditorium on campus, and some of the guys from ROTC had come along, and they cut the cords. And that's why, that's what silenced the Sacred Mushroom. Actually, we got some more cords out, put them out, and what do you know? About half an hour later, the same thing happened. So that's one thing. Larry is somebody that I think, geez, the world of, I mean, you know, sometimes when people have that much talent, they're not nice people. You know, sometimes they're kind of jerks. But, you know, Larry's a lot, he's like Gary Burbank. I mean, they're both just genuinely nice people. You know, they'll do anything for you. So I've been able to maintain my friendship with Larry over the years, and I'm glad to see it. One of the things that I hold dearly as far as the memory of Larry is concerned is about 4 or 5 years ago, I was singing with an old friend of mine named Dan Berger at a place called Awakenings, which is a wine and coffee bar over in Hyde Park Square. Our friend Stan Hertzman was booking talent there, and so he booked us. Well, about that time, Larry's wife Kim had a little problem with an automobile situation where she got a ticket. And since I'm an attorney, Larry asked me if I would mind representing her because it wasn't any big deal, but, you know, it wasn't her fault, one of those kind of things. So I said, you know, yeah, I'll do it. He said, what are you going to charge? I said, well, I'm going to charge two things. I'm going to charge a rehearsal and a gig. He said, what are you talking about? I said, I want you to come over and play with Berger and me at Awakenings. And, you know, God love him, he did it. We actually rehearsed. Brought him over. It was one of the best performances I think I've ever had with Larry playing and singing along with us. So I really enjoy that one. The other thing I can say about Larry is all the work that he's put in to Play It Forward, the local charity for musicians that I'm involved in, I'm still the president of. It started by Gary Burbank. Or we say it was started by Gary, but it was actually Gary and some other people, including Larry. And I was there at the beginning. We do things for musicians here in town that nobody else does. And when people get in trouble financially with medical problems or, you know, their house burns down, those types of things, we're there and we're ready to step in and help out. And so Larry has been a big part of that. And I thank him for the work that he's given for that, too.
steps on the stairs, I guess you're leaving. And I really can't pretend to be surprised. I don't wanna see you go. You know it's gonna hurt me so. If you don't wanna try, then you can't tell me why. If you're not gonna cry, why should I? That honeymoons aren't meant to last forever, but I think love should last until the end of time. And I don't wanna see you go. You know I'm gonna miss you so. If you don't wanna try, you can't even tell me why. If you're not gonna cry, why should I? Why should I love you like I do? Why should I when I know you'll be untrue? Why should I know you'll only hurt me again? If you don't wanna try, then you can't tell me why. If you're not gonna cry, why should I? Steps on the stairs, I guess you're leaving. And I really can't pretend to be surprised. And I don't wanna see you go. You know I'm gonna miss you so. If you don't wanna try, you can't tell me why. If you are not gonna cry, why should I?
Don't go away. There's much more to come as we give Larry Goshorn a round of radio applause for another hour. And we'll be right back with our roundtable of guests and Larry in just a moment.